Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And what is today? June 25th, right?
It is.
His mic is never on, Owen. Anyway. Yeah, we can now. There you go, Chris. You're back.
The 25th. That's right. And we days are almost at their longest. We've kind of gone beyond that, but the summer days are great and long. It's great to be here. It's great to be here with author of books. I love doing the interviews with people who are that passionate and put that much time into doing books.
Yeah.
You know, and so look forward to that.
Speaking of long days, I was driving to work today, and I was thinking, I really despise the cold and the dark, driving. And I'm thinking, this makes it all worthwhile. If I didn't see that and experience that 3 or 4 months, I probably wouldn't appreciate driving to work today and so forth. I had the exact same experience. Anyway.
I love the change of season, but I got one more thing to do
before we go to our guest. The consulate is kind of moving a little bit into the 21st century. Actually, we're very much in the 21st century. We're one of the
high-tech stuff we do.
We do a lot of, higher-end tech stuff in our company. And one thing that we've never really done is we've never really gotten into the Twitter concept. And yet I have a lot of clients and a lot of listeners who say, gee, I couldn't get your show, and so forth and so forth. So I figured, why don't we just set up a Twitter account, and that way when we do these shows, we can just tweet it out. If anybody wants to listen to it, they can listen to it. If they don't, they can just blow it off and move on.
So, well, we don't want them to just blow it off necessarily. But
they've
got
They could have that option.
It's about freedom. It's about freedom. But they can get the podcast, too.
They can get the podcast.
We have been doing that for a while.
That's right.
A long time.
And, we have, but we haven't really made it obvious as to where to get it. Now, this Twitter, anybody who follows will automatically get a tweet that it's available. Here's the show. Here it was what about. Do you want to listen? Listen. Also, articles that we write. That's something we've never done before with our listeners. We do it with our clients, but not with our listeners. And so they'll get that, too. So anyway, who are we talking to
tonight?
That's
exciting.
I didn't tell them what it was.
Go for it.
It was at the FinCon.
At the FinCon,
like DEF CON 5 or whatever,
Except
high-level
stands
battle
for
planning stands for financial consultant.
There we go.
At the FinCon.
So just as it sounds, so going to just
FinCon.
Okay, at FinCon.
At the FinCon. FinCon. Go ahead.
Into the Twitter universe. So without further ado, we'll get serious. And we do have our guest, Mackenzie Funk. I'm going to read right off the jacket off his book called Windfall, The Booming Business of Global Warming. He's a journalist whose work has appeared in Harper's, National Geographic, Rolling Stone, GQ, Outside, and the New York Times. He's a National Magazine Award and Livingston Award finalist and a winner of the Oaks Award for Environmental Journalism. He was a Knight Wallace Fellow at the University of Michigan, another cold place, where he studied economics and systems thinking. He lives in Seattle with his wife and son. So, Drew, take it away.
Hey, Mac. Good to have you tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, one thing I saw in your book that I thought was really cool is you made a lot of neat trips when you were writing this book.
Yeah, it was 24 countries and a dozen or so states, and it took a really damn long time. So,
you were in the Arctic for a while, too, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in the Arctic 4 or 5 times each. Well, some of those took quite a while. I was there for a month on a U.S. icebreaker. I was there for a couple weeks on a Canadian warship, and then up in Greenland for a couple weeks. I was in Iceland for a little over a week.
Now, did you get to see the Northern Lights? I always thought that would be a cool thing to see.
I never did.
No.
I saw a lot of ice.
A lot of ice, but no Northern Lights.
Unfortunately, I was there at the wrong time. I looked for them.
All right. So anyway, the thing that I liked about your book and reason I wanted to talk to you about it, Windfall, is because as an investor, we have to know where's the money going, and if it's going there, how do we take advantage of it? So it's not an issue of whether people want to debate or not debate global warming. It's a matter of there's a lot of money going into this, and it's going lots of different directions. And you really lay out a lot of neat ideas of what's going on.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing I found talking to a lot of investors, was that some were actually, they were sort of agnostic as to whether mankind was causing climate change. You know, most understood, as I think most scientists and most people who are honest looking at the facts, that this is something that has a human signal. But for the kind of investments they're doing, that doesn't matter. They're investing in the physical change itself. They're investing in warming temperatures. And, you know, there are various flavors of whether or not climate change is real. But even people who doubt that climate change is real, they usually mean that, you know, maybe man doesn't have such a huge part in causing this. You find very few people these days saying, no, temperatures aren't rising. No, the ice is just as it was. Because those are obviously and easily refuted. So you go up in the Arctic, anyone you talk to, they say, well, yeah, there's much less ice than there was. And it's that kind of investing that I've focused on, was people who are looking at these impacts. That can be melting ice, it can be rising seas or weather events or all sorts of things, and saying, okay, what's in it for me?
Right. So there's all kinds of things that are changing and so forth. And, you know, like you say, up in the Arctic, the ice is decreasing. So that creates opportunity. Down in the Antarctic, ice is increasing, which is a totally different phenomena that is caused, according to many people, for lots of different reasons. So you have, and as an investor, the concept is, just tell me what's happening and what people are doing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's what we're looking at here, right?
Yeah, I mean, actually, as I was finishing up the book, it was already written, it was already almost with the printer, and they wouldn't let me change anything about that. Monsanto bought the Climate Corporation, which is a big data insurer of basically farmers and agriculture that's focused on climate change, for $1 billion. I mean, that's the kind of money we're talking about. Shell has...
This company was a crop insurance company?
Effectively, yeah.
Okay.
What it does is it's taken mostly public data and found a way to put it on its computers, you know, basically put it all together in a computer. So it's things like USDA crop charts or stuff from the National Weather Service, all these things that are out there but not really, that people haven't made sense of. And they took sort of Silicon Valley ethics and thought, well, let's make this something that's accessible and easy to use, and let's see what we can do with it. And what it turns out you can do with it is give a much more focused crop insurance for farmers.
Huh.
At first they were thinking they would do basically weather derivatives for the rest of us. They would insure your wedding, or if you're a snowplow operator or a snowplow salesman, you know, they would insure you against too warm a winter.
Right.
And they realized that most of the money was in agriculture, and they compiled this giant data set that... it's probably the most powerful agricultural and weather data set that's out there, and that was extremely valuable. And that's their thought, is that as weather becomes more variable from climate change, and that farmers are going to need a better way to insure their crops. And, you know, that can be small farmers and big ones.
All right, Mac.
That's what Monsanto was buying.
Right. You got to hold on for us, and we're going to be taking a break, a pause. That's what we call it, right, Chris?
We do.
A pause.
We do.
And then we're going to come back, and we're going to get into some of the really cool things that money's going to. What's it happening here
sure. In
this industry? And right now, we're going to Maggie Hunter. We'll be right back. Money, Origin, Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm not even going to tell you why Noah picked that song. It's not even worth trying.
Did he
anyway,
pick it for a reason?
He said he did. But anyway, we're here with Mac Funk, and he wrote the book Windfall, talking about global warming. Who are the winners? Who are the losers? You know, Mac, there are some people that aren't unhappy with global warming, such as the people who live in Greenland and the people who live in Russia. They kind of think of this as a win for them.
Yeah, they do. I spent, you know, as I said, a couple weeks in Greenland, and I was traveling around the country, or if you want to call it a country. Right now it's a colony of Denmark.
It's one of the things they're trying to do with global warming, is turn it into a country.
Right. They're going for an independence movement, and their idea is basically that they can stop getting a subsidy from Denmark if they can pay their own way, and they can pay their own way with mineral wealth, and they can get to the minerals if the ice pulls back and the gold and zinc and everything else is there, and oil. There's a lot of oil in Greenland.
Right.
So that's their idea.
And Russia's doing the same thing.
Yeah, although I wouldn't call that a drill to freedom exactly, but but they are very much, you know, Russia's slated to get perhaps 50% of the Arctic Ocean. They've already claimed the North Pole.
All right.
Arctic Ocean has up to a quarter of the world's remaining petroleum. So Russia,
it's like they're playing Risk or something, you know, they're claiming the North Pole.
Well, they're not the only ones. To be fair to them, it's even those real politickers, the Canadians and the Danes. Everyone's going for it. America is too. We're just not going to get the pole.
And that's one of the things you bring up in the book is that Canada is actually drawing closer to the United States because of global warming. And they don't necessarily like it, but they sort of are.
Well, they could be. Canada is obviously part of NATO, and one worry with global warming is that if the Arctic melts, there will be fights over resources. I don't subscribe to that school of thought. I don't think that all the powers up there in the Arctic are really going to come to blows over who gets the biggest chunk of oil wealth up there, because everyone's going to get richer. Why are they going to fight over the scraps? But some people say that, and they say that'll bring Canada, being a NATO power, and the U.S. and other NATO powers together. I think that may happen, but I don't know that it's going to be because of the Arctic or because of global warming. In the meantime, Canada has been doing these sovereignty operations, saying, hey, this is ours. You guys can't come through the Northwest Passage. It's ours. You guys can't claim this part of the Arctic. It's ours. And those are directed at the U.S. as a frenemy, I suppose.
So let me ask you on the Arctic thing, you know, just so that I understand, and that is that when the ice is melting, it's strictly during the summer, and then it all refreezes during the winter?
Yeah, the important thing to understand about the Arctic is that there's effectively no land underneath. It's all ocean, and that's different than Antarctica. And so when the ice melts, it's just open ocean. And what's happened over recent years is that there would be what they called multi-year ice, and which is thick. It freezes one year, it stays frozen throughout the summer, and more ice grows on top of it, and it's hard for icebreakers to get through, it's hard for ships to get through, and it's hard for the sun to get through and melt. As that multi-year ice has been melting more and more, it's much easier for larger swaths of that ocean to become open in the summer. And so right now it is absolutely just a small portion of every summer that the Northwest Passage, for instance, opens up, or that the greater Arctic becomes accessible by boat. But that's something that's accelerating the more that multi-year ice goes away. The other interesting thing is that ice is very reflective, obviously. It's very white, and the sun hits it and bounces off. When it instead hits the dark ocean, all that energy, all that heat gets absorbed, and it melts all that much faster. So the fact that that's water underneath there is hugely important to the accelerated melt in the Arctic, which is going a lot faster than the rest of the globe.
Now, one of the things a hedge fund firm called Summit Global Management has actually used this concept to kind of develop a fund to go after fresh water sources. And so this is one concept. Why fresh water? How is that being affected by the quote-unquote global warming concept?
Yeah, well, Summit is one of many, many people who are trying to make money off of water shortage. And climate change is part of that. It's not the whole of the story. Somebody had the idea to grow rice in Australia, for instance, which is not a great idea. But Summit Global and other funds have attempted to buy up water rights, and that, you know, in some parts of the world, including the American West and in Australia, you can in fact buy a water right like you can buy a title to some land. You can buy a rancher's ranch, and you can also buy the water that's sitting underneath his ranch, and you can sell those separately. So Summit's been doing that. They've been going around to ranchers basically and saying, hey, we'd like your water. And once they've got enough of it, they either sell it to the boomtown downstream, or in Australia, they'll rent it back to that same farmer. So they've got this underlying asset, literally underlying, that keeps growing in value. And then they've got this income stream of the rental payments from the from the farmer. I mean, it's
now another hedge fund though went to the Sudan and bought farmland. Now I thought that was a little bit of a stretch, but obviously he's got an idea here.
Well, the Sudan may have been a stretch. It's in the midst of civil war, but this fund, among many others, has been buying up farmland. An area the size of France has changed hands, mostly within Africa in recent years. That's between leases and purchases of farmland.
Why farmland? And, how does that get affected by this?
Well, basically, food shortages, as we might remember from 2008, before the financial crisis was the food crisis. We're talking riots in two dozen countries based on not being able to get grain. There were food shortages so much that at Sam's Club they were keeping shoppers from buying too many bags of rice. And everyone said, what's going on here? And what was happening was drought and wealth. You know, China was getting richer and eating more meat, which meant more grains to feed more pigs. At the same time, there was a major drought in Australia that scientists had claimed to...
Wasn't 2008 also the time that Thailand kind of stopped exporting rice?
Right, yeah. Thailand was among many places that cut off rice exports.
Right, so that doesn't help the world supply.
That didn't happen in a vacuum. Thailand cut off its rice exports because it was not having enough rice to feed its people because of Australian rice exports being cut out by the drought. So it was all reaction to some climatic conditions and market conditions. So it was this was not just climate change, but a lot of smart people looked at this food crisis and said, "There's going to be more of this. Populations are growing." Weather conditions are getting worse for growing crops. There is going to be a almost Malthusian moment coming up, and the best thing to do at this moment is to put our money in crops. So we're not talking little hedge funds either. We're talking very big investment banks.
I understand. These were big guys that don't make investments lightly. So they're obviously got something that they're thinking about.
Look at Soros in Brazil. Look at what BlackRock is doing. Morgan Stanley, Goldman. Everyone had and has some farmland investments.
Another interesting thing you talk about is the green wall and the black wall. So, well, I'll just let you explain that. You know, so
sure.
They're trying to stop Africa's desert. Go ahead.
One of the worries with climate change, of course, that the dry places will get drier. You know, the wet's going to get wetter, especially if you're on a beach. And dry places like the Sahara are expected in parts to grow. And so Africa... Mostly African nations came up with an idea to build a wall of trees 15 kilometers thick all the way across Africa, basically a wall at the edge of the Sahara to keep it from expanding into the Sahel. And it's kind of a stupid idea.
They need water to keep those trees alive,
right.
If I'm not mistaken.
And from a big picture, and a lot of international donors poo-pooed this, but if you get up close and there is a microclimate that forms when you plant a lot of trees, so there is that. And even though deserts don't necessarily expand in the way that armies fight wars, and there's not exactly a front, there aren't two phalanxes lined up on either side. It's more like leprosy, where spots appear and then suddenly the whole thing is gone. That's desertification. But to plant trees is not the worst idea if you want to cool the climate and keep some humidity in the area. And it's also clear that no one's giving Africa in particular enough money to adapt to these changes. And so this is what they can do.
So
it
what's
turned
the...
out to be a major make-work project, which relates to the black wall.
Right,
which is keeping black migrants out of Europe, basically.
Yeah, and it was mainly Spain, right?
It's not just Spain. Although Spain has had a big part in it, there is, like in the United States, a large population of people trying to come up from the South to live in the more temperate and economically rich North. In our case, of course, it's Latin Americans coming to this country. In the case of Europe, in many cases, it's sub-Saharan Africans. And to be clear, these are not mostly climate migrants yet. These are mostly pure economic migrants. But there are some people who are getting pushed out of areas like the Sahel because of climatic conditions. They're moving to the cities, and then when they get to the cities, they sometimes move on to try to get to Europe. They do that in boats. They do that in planes. They would set out from the coast of Senegal, where I was, and try to make it to the Canary Islands, which are part of Spain. Once they're in there, it's like they've touched home base. They can get to the mainland Europe.
Yeah, and unfortunately, so, many of them didn't make it.
Right. Shipwrecks are killing thousands, more like tens of thousands. It's hard to know the numbers for sure, but it's certainly tens of thousands by now.
Last decade. You got to hold on with me, Mac, and then we're going to come right back. We're going to finish up on our second half of the show. We're going to get into more of the things that are going on in investments and so forth. But right now, we got to go to Maggie Hunter in traffic. Take it away, Maggie.
Oh, it's too hot, lady. Got to run for shelter, got to run for shade. It's too hot, lady.
All right, Noah, there you go. Now that's a good lead in there, Noah. All right, so we're here with Mac Funk, and we're talking about windfall. And what are some of the economic advantages from the things that companies and governments are going to do about global warming? And so, whether you agree or disagree with it as an investor, we just say, what are they doing? And let me figure out what I'm going to do with that. Or what's happening? Let me decide, and I'm going to go from there. And so one of the things I was curious about, Mac, and you talked about this on this green wall. You talked about these two native troops tribes. And you talked about this one thing, and I'm really just curious. It has nothing really to do with the conversation in the sense of investments. But what is the Mahakaris? Did I say that tribe right?
It's not a tribe. It's a
and country?
Japanese... It's a Japanese religious group, Sukyo Mahikari. Well, Japanese, they're now global.
And they talk. You talk about light energy.
Yeah, they. So it does tie into the fact that the most help that this part of Africa could get to deal with the effects of climate change was a couple French soldiers, a bunch of volunteers that they basically forced to work for them rather than get on boats and go try to go to Europe. And then they got this group, Sukyo Mahikari, which some call a cult, which uses light energy to heal. So they would plant the trees of the Great Green Wall in the ground, and then they would put their hands out and beam sort of invisible to me energy down at them. They, when they had an accident, one of their kids had part of the tent fall on her head, and instead of, putting a bandage on it, as I would do, they beamed light energy down to her head. All that, and they were incredibly efficient at planting trees, so I don't mean to disparage them. They're very good at planting trees. They're much faster than the Senegalese teams.
Huh. I was just curious. It was a fascinating part of the book. One of the other things you talk about is you say that there are islands that are potentially doomed to go under the sea levels. So how much is the ocean's sea levels risen? And where do they expect them to go?
The second part is hard to answer. If all the ice on Greenland were to melt, for instance, that would be enough water to raise the sea levels 21 or 22 feet, which obviously is quite a bit. Now, how much has the sea risen so far? Extremely little. And that's because the big melt of Greenland and of Antarctica and of a lot of the glacial ice is really just beginning, at least in geological time. So we're talking millimeters so far, inches in some places along the eastern seaboard of sea level rise since the beginning of the industrial age, which people climate change on.
Right.
So not much at all. But that's so you understand that is just from the warming of the oceans. As we know, heat something up, heat water up, it expands. That's not with the influx of ice from Greenland in particular. And if that were to all melt at once, which it won't do, but if it were all to melt at once, we would have a 21-foot jump.
But you talked about something. It seemed like you said that some nations island nations were actually going to file lawsuits against countries like the United States. I read that right?
You read that exactly right, and some lawyers were very happy about that.
Yeah. I'm sure they're
sure they were.
Ambulance chasers, now you have water chasers.
Yeah, there have been some lawsuits already. Alaskan tribes have sued some of the big oil companies for damage to their their towns. And the island nations have also been looking at what can we do in terms of lawsuits to, you know, to basically get paid for having no country anymore. I mean, the plight of these places, they're basically they're 5 meters off of sea level and at their highest point, some of them. And sure, they won't immediately get inundated, but the reality is in coastal areas, it's not this washing over of the ocean that you're really worried about. It's more the death by a thousand cuts, and that seawater intrusion starts to kill your crops. You know, if you've got salty groundwater underneath your patch of island, you can't grow anything there anymore, so you don't have any food, you don't have anything to drink. It becomes uninhabitable long before it becomes underwater. And so already some places are reporting seeing that, places where they've had maybe a foot of sea level rise, that really matters to them. Their idea is, we're gonna sue the big emitters, we're gonna sue the big emitting countries of carbon.
Wow.
Or we will try to get lawyers to make sure we can still be in the United Nations or still be recognized as countries after we no longer physically exist, which is a scary and somewhat intriguing legal problem.
Well, let's talk about the really probably one of the most fascinating things that I read in here was this concept of dengue fever and, and how that relates, but the way they're dealing with it. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, well, so one thing people, if you read these long and pretty boring climate reports, and I've done a few, you read about disease, which isn't the first thing you'd think about with climate change, but for instance, Bayer, you know, the big pharmaceutical company, has said in its reports, hey, we're going to expect to do well with some of our drugs because of allergies. There's going to be more pollen thanks to climate change. And there's going to be more pollen in places in Europe where we sell some allergy medicines, but not as much as we'd like to. But don't worry, climate change is going to change the numbers there, so we're going to sell a lot more of this and that drug in parts of Europe because of the plant growth. You see things like there will be more tick bites, and in particular people are focused on mosquito-borne diseases like dengue fever and malaria. The connection between climate change and dengue fever is not as simple as it gets warmer, and therefore there's more malaria or there's more dengue fever. It's a little bit trickier than that. It has to do with people maybe leaving their windows open because it's so hot, and then mosquitoes fly in. Or it has to do with rainfall patterns and the gestation period of these bugs. But in general, people think that there's going to be more dengue fever because of climate change. And that means that there's an opportunity for pharmaceutical companies and related ones to basically fight that. Dengue fever has long been a problem in the developing world, and drug companies have perhaps been less eager to build a drug for people who can't pay for it.
But the thing that was really cool was when...
Well, we're
getting there.
We're getting there.
We got to go
quickly to it.
Okay,
here it is. Genetically modified mosquitoes.
Genetically modified mosquitoes. Now, I wonder if you're...
Genetically modified mosquitoes.
I wonder if you're allowed to do a genetically modified mosquito... and if people will allow them to be in the air.
Well, they have already in Brazil, the Cayman Islands, and Malaysia, and they're trying to get approval for Key West, Florida, where there was a dengue outbreak a couple summers ago. And that would be the first place in the United States where these genetically modified mosquitoes would work. Here's what they do. They only release genetically modified males because mosquitoes, the males don't bite, the females do. These males
are that makes perfect sense
sexy.
To me.
Yeah, it does.
All right.
Well, you'd understand this. You'd understand
can pause
the second
there,
part
Drew.
Too.
Pause there, Drew.
Super sexy male mosquitoes. Okay. And these are ones that all the female mosquitoes want to mate with, is the idea. Or the reality is that they're not that sexy, but they release so many of them that the wild females don't have a choice but to find one of these genetically modified ones. They mate, and their offspring die in the larvae stage. They never become mosquitoes, and it kills the entire population.
Hmm.
In places like Key West, it's either that or spend a ton of money on chemicals, because nobody wants to go on vacation to Key West and get dengue fever, believe me.
Hmm.
So they're very serious about eradicating it there, and right now it's been through chemical means and non-chemical sprays.
And that's cool. I thought that was a pretty cool concept.
It's very smart. It does scare a lot of people. The pushback in Key West and in other places has been very loud.
Mutant mosquitoes on the loose.
Yeah, you can imagine.
I can only imagine. Anyway, you got to hold on for me. And
one
we're going to come
time.
Back
one
and one last time, and then we're going to talk about another really cool part of the book. And but we got to hold on. How's that, Noah? We got to pause, and we're going to come back with Mac Funk. We're going to talk about Windfall. All right, take it away, Mark Thibodeau.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Mac Funk, and he wrote the book Windfall. Whether you agree or disagree with global warming, there's a booming business. And as an investor, you should understand that. So, Mac, we don't have a lot of time left, so we've got to move quick. And I wanted to get to these really fascinating Nathan Myhrvold. Did I say that
Myhrvold.
Right? Myhrvold.
Right enough. Myhrvold.
Myhrvold. He's fascinating. Intellectual Ventures, his company IV, leaves Microsoft. He forms this company, and he says, look, if global warming is going to happen, let's just do things that we can counterbalance it. Let's use technology to offset it. And, you know, the first one that he talks about, I find it interesting, is sulfur dioxide to counter global warming. So, again, we don't have a lot of time, so let's go through these like a minute. Give us a quick take. What's he thinking of doing? And there are a lot of people that disagree with him, say it's going to really be a big disaster if you did what you wanted to do.
Well, he patented, you know, Intellectual Ventures is a company that patents ideas and then gets revenue off of that. What he's patented and others with him is a system to shoot sulfur into the sky, mimicking a giant volcano. And one thing we know from volcanoes past is that when there's a big explosion, big volcano, that it cools the global climate. You know, temperatures will drop 1 or 2 degrees. So he's certainly far from the first person to say, what if we did this? It's called geoengineering. What if we found a way to get a bunch of sulfur up there? That's what volcanoes do. Let's do that, and it'll cool the globe. End of story. Well, let me just quickly say that that's not at all the end of the story, because there are two things. One is the temperature, and two is the climate. Climate change is what we're really talking about here. And let's say you mimic a volcano. Yes, you can change the temperature. That's pretty clear. Can you get the same climate back? Can you get the same rainfall patterns back? There is early evidence saying that if you do this kind of thing, no, that you could get the same temperature, but certainly different rainfall patterns. Notably, you could kill the monsoon in Africa. And so all those people who are going to get it the worst from climate change, you know, small farmers in Africa or Asia will still get it the worst, but we might protect the rest of us.
Now, the other one that was fascinating was a hurricane suppressor.
Yeah.
I didn't understand
hurricane emasculator, they call it.
Okay.
Well, hurricanes get their power from the surface temperature of the ocean.
Okay.
So one reason that Sandy was so big was that the ocean was hot, and it just sucked up all that energy. If you could get cool water to the surface of the ocean, then you could make less powerful hurricanes, is the idea. So it's just a system of pumps to take the cool water from the deep and put it on top of the ocean, and so when a hurricane comes by, it doesn't have any place to get its energy, and it just sort of peters out.
But a hurricane's so big, how could they get that much water up there?
Yeah, thousands of pumps was the answer. I have no idea if this works out economically, but they wanted to make it basically a giant insurance policy. Let's say you live in Florida, you live in Key West, you've somehow survived the dengue outbreak, and now you want to survive the hurricanes. Well, maybe you'll pay an insurance company money to, you know, make those pumps work out there. It's a zany idea, to say the least, but it's been patented.
Yeah, you were telling me, and I think on page 87, you say, need is the father of invention, and that there have been a lot of good ideas and bad ideas. I remember reading them. What are some of the weird things they talked about on page 87? You talked about them, right?
Well, that section's about Israel. It's about water shortages. And the Israelis have done desalination, which is, on the face of it, a very good idea, taking seawater, turning it into fresh water, and making it potable for places that need it. And it is a good idea for places that can afford it. One thing about desalination so far, it uses a massive amount of energy, so it's something that can only be paid for by countries like ours that have the resources. And then it takes so much energy that it emits a ton of carbon. So if you believe that carbon is what's causing all this warming and causing some of this drought, which requires us to build desalination plants that are sort of like a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah. So what are some of the other things? Oh, I know what it is. Monsanto has been actively working with genetically modified seeds and so forth, you know, for drought resistance and so forth. And a lot of people are opposed to this again.
Yeah, Monsanto, as you may know, their patents are beginning to run out on their biggest sellers, you know, the Roundup Ready crops. Roundup is, of course, the spray that you spray on your crop. And Monsanto's genetic modification to date has mostly been building crops that can handle that spray without dying, so it kills just the weeds. Those patents are beginning to run out. Generics are coming in, and they're looking for a new profit area. You know, they paid $1 billion for the Climate Corporation, so obviously they're looking at climate change quite a bit. I visited a place where they're doing genetic modification. They were doing of rice, make rice able to withstand saltwater intrusion, make wheat able to withstand drought. They're beginning to test some of this, also corn, and it's obviously the big focus. So far, these aren't working dramatically better than normal hybrids, non-genetically modified hybrids, but it may, even a little bit better, might be appealing to some farmers.
So we have about a minute left. What was your favorite idea that you came up, you noticed or researched or whatever when you were writing this book?
Well, to be clear, I picked a lot of ideas that I didn't think were good ideas.
Hey, I find them fascinating.
No, I think they're absolutely fascinating. But I think it's important to understand what it means when we come up with a bunch of technologies that can only save ourselves. You know, it might give us buy us 30 or 50 years more time with climate change. But there is a lot of things I looked at in the book. Help the North, it helps the rich countries and makes things a little bit more restive in the South, which means more migration. I have to say that my favorite was the genetically modified mosquitoes. I was skeptical, to say the least, when I went, and I came away thinking it's a very smart idea, and maybe it is better than chemicals, not to mention, you know, seeing all these scientists getting bitten on purpose by mosquitoes and seeing them grow the mosquitoes in Oxford, which is where I was great.
It was a fascinating one. I thought that was pretty cool, a good idea, you know. And wasn't there something about that they had one that actually killed the dengue fever? It didn't destroy the mosquito. It just killed the dengue fever in them?
They're working. The ones I looked at are not doing that. But, in fact, they're working at all kinds of things, yeah. Make it that they kill the dengue, or you know, you can do a lot with genes. A lot of it is scary to people, but a lot of it is powerful, I suppose.
Well, Mac, I appreciate you being with us. Windfall by Mackenzie Funk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we're going to be back next week with, I guess, an open show, right?
That's right, open show.
All right. Well, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.